Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It was another eventful week in financial markets with the S&P 500 not only up for the first time in 4 weeks, though it did mark the best week for the index of 2024, this all occurring despite some mixed macro data, which we'll cover today. So joining us to kick off another trading week, glad to welcome back for the CIO Strategy Snapshot, Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. With that, Jason, welcome back. Thank you for joining us on this Monday morning. Looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. It's good to be here on a beautiful spring day here in New York City.
So, Jason, the mixed data point I referenced, that being the Q1 GDP print, which was released last week, the market didn't react well to the print. In fact, it did trigger some renewed talk of stagflation. So I'm curious to hear your interpretation of the economic data as of late.
Well, if we go back into kind of Q1, the market narratives have been shifting around from like Goldilocks to, you know, comfortably kind of embracing soft landing. We got data for March in early April that was more aligned with kind of like this no landing scenario where you don't see kind of growth or inflation moderated at all. The GDP numbers add like another little twist to that narrative, and that suggested that perhaps the economy is growing less quickly than people assume, but also inflation is even, you know, higher. And that kind of came down to the specific data. The number for Q1 was the economy grew 1.6%. The consensus around 2.5%. The Atlanta Fed had a GDP tracking estimate that was almost 3%, so quite a bit less than expectations. And also down from like 4.5% or almost 5% and like 3.4% in Q3 and Q4 of last year. So decent surprise to the downside on growth. On inflation is the kind of the personal consumption kind of inflation indicator on the quarter was 3.7%. The forecast, consensus forecast was 3.4. In Q4 it was only 2%. So, you know, you saw a big jump there. If you take this data just that literally at face value, what it suggests is that, you know, growth is slowing, inflation is accelerating. That's not a good combination. That's, you know, people kind of refer to this as stagflation. But if you look at other data, it's that's more timely, like kind of monthly data. I think the picture for the macro economy remains, you know, more benign. If we go to this personal consumption data that is implicit in the Fed, if you actually look on a month-by-month basis, what you can see is that it shrank in January. On a month-by-month basis, it goes down 0.3%, but it grew strongly at 0.5% in February and March. Sort of the opposite pattern held for the PC inflation data on a monthly basis. It was strong in January at 0.5%. Moderated to 0.27% for February and up a little bit to 0.32% in March. So the monthly data, if you look at the trends, it's suggesting that growth is still strong. A bit of weakness at the start of the year is probably just a reflection of that consumers pulled forward spending into the, you know, fourth quarter during the holiday season. Some difficult weather in January that led to a decline. But as the weather's got nicer in the spring, it's accelerated as we kind of moved throughout. So no real signs of the economy kind of slowing much at all. And the inflation story, at least, is consistent with like a big sort of spike in January that's kind of moderating. Still uncomfortably high for the Fed and for the markets, but it's not obviously accelerating. So I think where I kind of come out of all of this is that to characterize the economy, it's been in a higher for longer for growth, inflation, and rates. That's kind of the environment we're in. But there's also not a lot to indicate that, you know, expectations for moderation by year end of growth, inflation, and therefore rates as well, that still looks like it's on track. You know, the GDP numbers don't, you know, trend, like, you know, kind of cover that. They're kind of masked, you know, but the monthly data sort of indicates that. And just one final interesting data point on the GDP. It came out on Thursday. The Atlanta Fed, that does their GDP tracking estimates, you know, they immediately switch by Friday to their second quarter outlook. It's not based on a lot of data because we don't even have April data out yet. So it's more of a model based. And the initial estimate is 3.9% for Q2. Which kind of tells you that the model is basically looking at this undershoot in Q1 due to inventories, due to a lot of, you know, negative drag from net exports. That's going to reverse. So if that literally were to play out, if we were to get 3.9% in Q2, averaged out for the first half of the year, this is growth of over 2.5%. So again, a resilient economy, strong growth, you know, high, but it's also kind of coupled with high inflation and so for now at least high rates.
So, Jason, it's interesting, just reflecting on the month of April, it has been a volatile month for the markets, yet you look at where indices are today, not far off from where they started at the beginning of April. So I do want to tie in your latest blog here, that title, More Than Meets the Eye, where you do offer an explanation for why that is the case. So can you expand a bit on that for us?
Well, the title of the blog is kind of a reference to the fact that if you look at the data in one way, quarterly, it paints a somewhat negative view. If you look at it monthly, a different angle, it actually paints a more positive view. If you kind of zoom out overall, though, I think the story is that what we've had for the, you know, kind of the markets overall is the, you know, it's been a story of reflation, meaning kind of growth has, you know, been sort of better than expected since the start of the year. Inflations have gone up a little bit, or at least inflation is not coming down as quickly as people assumed. But overall, a pretty kind of good macro environment, one of kind of reflation. And you look at the market performance over that time period, that's what it reflects, meaning equities are up. But the sectors in the U.S. that have led the way are things like industrials, materials, and energy, which are, you know, more cyclical kind of, you know, inflation trade. They kind of do well in the global economy. The U.S. economy is doing well. Interest rates have, you know, risen, and therefore bond returns have gone down or negative for a lot over the last 3 months, except for those parts of the market like U.S. high-yield corporate bonds, which have less rate sensitivity, but also their spreads have compressed because of the better macro environment. They've done, you know, at least positive. Commodity prices, the best performing asset class overall. So you've seen this kind of environment that's kind of consistent with this inflation narrative. And so, yes, we've had volatility in the month of April. A lot of that, of course, is due to the rising geopolitical tensions in the Middle East, you know, the potential escalation of, you know, the war between Israel and Hamas and the tensions between Israel and Iran. As those abated, those, you kind of strip some of that out, what you've seen is a market sort of, it's adjusting to this higher for longer kind of environment. I think that's kind of the, you know, the kind of overarching story. We can flip and flop, you know, day to day or week to week on whether it's a no landing, stagflation, soft landing, something else. But if you just actually look at the market performance, you know, investors kind of by and large sort of believe in this kind of higher for longer environment. It's still a relatively, you know, good environment. If growth is good, well, that should continue to sort of, you know, moderate as the year goes on. So I think that to me kind of characterizes where the markets are, what's really going to drive it. Day to day, there can be sort of fluctuations, but, you know, I think for much of this debate, as much as investors sort of talk about it, if you actually look at what's going on in the market pricing, it is consistent with investors kind of ultimately kind of holding this overall relatively kind of constructive view of the macro economy.
Now, Jason, you did go on to mention that investors are debating which is the right scenario to describe the U.S. economy, whether it's a soft landing, no landing, or even stagflation. Now, within the latest UBS CIO House View letter, it does lay out three scenarios for us. So can you walk us through what those scenarios are?
Well, our base case has been all year for a soft landing, which we would define as, you know, obviously no recession occurring, but also growth moderates back towards sort of 2%. Inflation continues to decline, so like disinflation, you know, progresses. We won't be back at 2% inflation by year end, and maybe not even by the end of next year, but relative to some of the current levels and fears of stickiness, that proves to be unfounded. Inflation will continue to decline, and that is going to allow the Fed to be able to, you know, cut rates and at least if they don't start, you know, by September, as we assume, the expectation is that it won't be that far after, and interest rates, especially the 10-year, is able to decline, you know, as a result of this kind of moderating macroeconomy. That's still kind of our base case. For a long time, our downside scenario would be a hard landing, like a recession. Given the economic strength that I just discussed, it's hard to see a recession beginning, you know, anytime soon, at least, you know, without absent a significant shock, whether there really is an escalation in the Middle East. You know, oil prices absolutely surge, and it would take a really significant move for oil prices to actually, you know, tip the U.S. economy into a recession. So, you know, we need some sort of kind of shock, you know, otherwise it looks, you know, quite unlikely. So really, for the downside scenario for the financial markets right now, for equities and other risk assets, it's not a recession, but it's actually the economy kind of overheating because growth stays elevated, inflation stays sticky, maybe re-accelerates. It's not showing any improvement. Forget about rate cuts. Now rate hikes become sort of back on the table. The market starts pricing for that, and we see yields go higher. Like the 10-year, you know, well surpasses sort of 5%. It's kind of high from last October. That rise is a pain point for risk assets. Equity sell-off, you know, more than 10% kind of that scenario. And the upside is still kind of, you know, it's kind of this Goldilocks scenario where inflation moderates, but growth doesn't. It's kind of the best of all worlds. You know, as I've kind of written about and I've talked about in this podcast before, if we get that Goldilocks data kind of playing out, you know, later this year, then we really have an environment where we've been in almost kind of this Goldilocks regime for not just a few months or a couple of quarters, but over like 2 to 3 years. And so it starts to become less Goldilocks, but more like this is a roaring 20s type of environment. So, you know, where however you want to label it, upside scenario is a very good macro environment where inflation falls, but growth doesn't moderate because of productivity gains, because of good labor supply, and so an overall very positive scenario. But base case remains kind of a soft landing.
So, Jason, just turning to this week, one of the big events being the Fed's FOMC meeting that will kick off tomorrow, though culminating on Wednesday, May 1st, when we will hear the rate decision. In light of recent data, Jason, what do you expect to hear from the Fed this week?
Well, for the last week, the Fed officials were in a blackout period. They couldn't publicly comment. So the last, you know, we heard from them was about 10 days ago. The language already at that point in time from various Fed officials had become more hawkish. You know, consistently across the board, saying things such as, you know, we don't need rate cuts anytime soon. We need to see more evidence that inflation is kind of really coming down. So definitely more hawkish than what you saw in Q1, where some officials could talk about, like, maybe we could see cuts within a few meetings if inflation continues to fall. So that is likely to continue with this FOMC meeting. There are no changes to their economic projections. That happened at the March meeting. There'll be no changes to the dot plot. So not a lot of explicit formal guidance from the Fed. You find out the statement that comes out will probably have some tweaking of the wording, but the real focus will ultimately be on what Jay Powell says in his press conference. And from there, you know, he'll be asked a variety of questions, but from there he might say something along the lines of, you know, relative to March, you know, maybe most committee members now expect it'll be less than three cuts. So without any change of formal change of the dot plot, you can allude to how clearly that the consensus is shifting, which wouldn't be a surprise at all to the market. You know, at this point in time, you know, the markets realize, given the economic data, that fewer cuts this year are likely. Now it's just over 30 basis points of cuts, so really nothing fully priced until December, which means that it would take quite a hawkish message from the Fed to surprise investors. It could just be, you know, we think we're going to do less than three cuts because the market's basically saying just over one. We think that the bar is quite high. Keep in mind that the Fed only has one additional month of economic data, basically March data versus what they had in February, the March meeting when they only had data through February. So not a lot of new information. Yes, it shows inflation is still high, but it kind of began with some of the comments about the overall trend. It's maybe not quite as bad as, you know, some of the headline numbers suggest. Given where the market's pricing, it would really take something along the lines of the Fed basically almost explicitly saying, you know, cuts this year are unlikely, or Powell making even a comment that, you know, they would even consider, you know, hiking rates, you know, or it's a more symmetric outcome. There's just not enough information, you know, relative to where they were, the guidance they've already given, for them to have that kind of hawkish pivot. So sorry to sort of bottom line it, I'd say the Fed is likely to meet the market where it currently is, not necessarily go beyond that. If that's the case, it's going to be a somewhat relatively uneventful Fed meeting because we just need more data to see how this plays out, and we'll start to get that already on Friday with the payrolls report for April. And critically on Tuesday of this week, we get the first quarter employment cost index. That's the broadest measure of labor, more like force growth or like wage growth for labor. It's better than average hourly earnings that comes out every month. If that stays contained around 1% or even less, that will be reassuring to the Fed that the labor market continues to moderate. And if anything, that might give them scope to straighten out, sound too hawkish on Wednesday. But otherwise, I think it's the market, so the Fed will meet the markets, and we just need a couple more months of data until June to get a good sense of where the Fed is headed for the second half of this year.
Before we close out today, Jason, I do want to turn to the investment outlook. I know UBS CIO recently released the investment strategy guide for the month of May. So can you speak a bit to the latest portfolio guidance per the House View update?
Sure. So the, you know, given the overall view of the soft landing, it hasn't really changed despite all the volatility in the data. We didn't really change any of our major asset class preferences. I've already mentioned like this change in the scenarios where like now our downside scenario is an overheating, not a recession. In terms of our key messages, again, they're more sort of tweaks at the margin rather than kind of a significant revamp. So for example, one of the messages was optimized tech exposure. Given the volatility we've seen in the tech space, and we really haven't talked at all about, you know, the volatility we've seen in some of those stocks as a result of initially maybe some disappointing earnings guidance, more so than earnings results, coupled with, you know, much better earnings results and guidance we got last week from some of the large cap tech companies. There's a lot of volatility. You know, the message is take advantage of the tech volatility. when there was a pullback, you know, there was an opportunity to buy, but things have kind of rallied already pretty quickly in just a matter of days. You know, so sort of when those opportunities arise, it's a chance to buy and add sort of exposure to tech if you're underweight. Because ultimately, we think the tech story, the AI story, still has a good kind of runway to go. Quality bonds still remain attractive at these levels with the 10-year approaching 4.7%. There's certainly a risk that it can go higher, like in an overheating scenario, but in your base case, we think rates are kind of near the top and they're going to generally kind of head lower. So quality bonds, adding some duration kind of across the board, it's not a bad idea at this point in time. And then the one thing that's interesting about the kind of reflation narrative I alluded to for the past 3 months, everything has kind of followed the playbook, except with some exceptions, and small caps being one of them. They have not sort of performed typically how you get in an environment where growth is better and inflation is kind of staying where it is. So we think that means that there is certainly scope for small caps to kind of catch up if this self-funding scenario plays out as we assume. So that's another opportunity that investors can look at as a way to kind of position for ongoing inflation, ultimately morphing into kind of pure soft landing.
Well, Jason, very productive conversation today as you did recap recent macro data, what that means for the markets, what you've been picking up on, as well as keeping us current on UBS CIO's thinking when it comes to the market, the macro environment, and the guidance when it comes to asset allocation. So as you laid out for us, a lot of key events coming up over the next few days. So do look forward to catching back up with you next Monday and seeing how all this plays out.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. You as well. We have been joined today by Jason Trejo, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I do want to highlight two items which Jason did make reference to on today's conversation, that being his most recent blog, More Than Meets the Eye, as well as the May UBS CIO House View Investment Strategy Guide and monthly letter. Those resources all available for you now up on UBS.com/CIO. Though, if you are a client of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor to receive copies of those resources directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.